You're listening to Cattails.
Hi, this is Kat and welcome to Cattails. British country musician Charlie Lansburgh started performing professionally in the 1970s, but it wasn't until he appeared on an Irish TV show in 1994 with What Colour Is the Wind that divine intervention opened doors onto a musical career that has spanned decades. Now he chats to me about his numerous musical awards, being inducted into the British Country Music Hall of Fame, and about sharing his childhood with a monkey. This is The One with Charlie Lansburgh. Hello, Charlie, and welcome to the show. How are you today?
I'm all right now, Kath. It's great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
No worries.
We've had a few long journeys on the trip so far, but I'm recovered today. And I'm all set to go for the next few that we've got in ahead of us, you know.
Yeah, you're nearly through it now, actually, aren't you? You've done quite a few dates on this tour, I see, and all parts of the country, which is interesting.
Yeah, it's marvellous because we go round and we're going to places we've been before, and we see old friends from, you know, going back years now. So we've been up to Inverness in Scotland and down to Truro in Cornwall and all places in between. But it's been great fun. I've got great people around me, smashing band, and we're all mates. And as I say, I meet lovely people and I'm doing the thing that I love. So I'm very, very fortunate.
Oh, yeah. Do you know, not many people can say they're doing something they love and they're actually, got a good career out of it as well. So, yes, I guess you are very fortunate. Yeah. But I suppose it didn't always start that way because you were... Well, you were a professional musician in the 70s, weren't you? But it took until the 90s before you kind of cut through on all that. Was that a bit frustrating for you?
Well, it sounds like it would be, you know, because I did a whole host of jobs, you're probably well aware of it. You know, I've been a postman in Coventry, I've been in the army, I've been a flour mills, grocery store manager, and on. Latterly, I was a teacher. And all the time, I was plying my trade of a night in pubs and things like that. And hoping for a break. Mm. And I had many rejections down the years. And you sort of think, this is never going to happen. And then in 95, after yet another rejection, I came away from the phone thinking, that's it. You know, perhaps I should forget this. Mm. And the next day I thought, no, I'm not giving up. It's the thing I love most. And I thought, what can I do instead of sitting here moping? And I phoned RTE in Dublin and said, would you be interested in having me back? I'd done it once, but had no album or anything to go with it. And he said, we've been trying to get you, Charlie. Can you come this week? And I went just with an acoustic guitar and a set of pedals I used to play with my feet, just a one-man band thing.
Yeah.
Sang two of my songs. And the following week, my son picked me up from school and said, Dad, you're in the Irish charts. And I said, what am I? Am I 98? And I would have been delighted with that because I've never been in the charts. And he said, no, Dad, you're number two. And the following week, number one. And my life was sort of transformed. So when it seemed as though, this thing was never going to happen and I was further than ever, it all came to fruition overnight almost. Within a month or so, I was back on the road touring with my own band and playing to sell out audiences all around Ireland. So a little bit of a fairy story, really.
It is, isn't it, really? I mean, that's quite incredible. I wonder what it was that finally, I don't know, tipped the energy over into a new place or something. Something kind of clicked there, didn't it? What's your theory on that? Because that must have been quite incredible.
Well, I think it was a combination of the songs that I played, the Irish people, obviously, that got behind me. And I'm a great believer, I'm a very ordinary fella, but prior to this happening, the year before, in 94, I've been arguing with the Almighty for years, saying, wouldn't it be good if this happened, you know, and open that door, and I could do the thing I really want to do, you know.
Yeah.
And towards the end of it, I thought, no, it mustn't be meant to be. So I said, all right, Lord, you know, I give in. I'll be a teacher in Birkenhead if you want me to, but I don't fancy it very much, and you'll have to help me.
Yeah.
And it's almost as if, from that submission, that the whole thing began to take place and culminated in that night on Irish television. And I think, as I say, it was a combination of the songs. The presenter gave me a wonderful build-up.
Yeah.
And the Irish people went out in droves and bought. By this time, I had an album.
Wow.
And it was remarkable. Somebody gave me a clip from the paper with the Irish top 20 in, And there was my name sat above all these illustrious names. I mean, there was even Elvis and Simple Minds and all sorts of wonderful people in there. And it was exhilarating, but a little bit scary, because I went straight from playing dockside pubs to sometimes a backdrop of fights and things to suddenly walking into these halls full of people with great expectations, you know. So it was, as I say, a little bit exhilarating, but also a little bit sort of frightening, you know.
Yes, but of course you've been put on the right path, though, in a way, hadn't you? A bit of a divine intervention, I'm sure. It feels like that to me. And it's a bit like now the modern phrase is about cosmic ordering, isn't it? You know, asking for what you want and receiving it. But that's a great story where actually you went, do you know what, I can't do much more, over to you, and wham.
I give up.
Incredible.
It was a bit scary, because they put this band around me that I'd done the album with, and they were all from down the Midlands, and then put me out, and I didn't even know my own songs that well, because when I was playing in the pubs, I sang mainly covers of other people's songs.
Yeah.
Occasionally I'd slip one of my own in and wouldn't mention it was mine in case, you know, nobody thought much of it, you know.
Of course.
But so I went on the road with all these songs of my own, and plus the discipline of playing with a band where I just sat on my own in the pub with a guitar, I suddenly had the added discipline of knowing where the introductions and the, you know, the intervals came and all the rest of it. And my own songs.
Wow.
Which thankfully people wanted to hear, you know.
I think it was the
songs that unlocked the door. When I started writing, I'd been playing in pubs and that. I thought, I'm getting nowhere. What can I do? And I'd always loved lyrics and things. I thought, well, I'll have a go. And I never had much faith in my own ability to write songs. But ironically happened, I began to get a reputation as a songwriter with some of the Irish people recording some of my songs. But I was still getting no further afield until this crucial night in Dublin when I sang two of my own. In fact, he called me back for the second one. I was only supposed to do one song. He said, if we have time, Charlie, I'll call you back at the end. You can give us that other song. And I said, okay. And at the end of the show, he was talking to a gentleman in the audience who had a bit of a stutter, and he was taking a bit of time over his answers. I thought, well, that's it, you know, and I was about to make my way back to the dressing room. And he called me out. He even extended the show a little bit to let me finish the song, gave me this wonderful build-up, and that was it. That was this sort of, you know, the moment of all, I think. Yeah.
Isn't that incredible? You know, it's these pivotal moments, I guess, in your career that actually take you on a different path, and suddenly it opens up the doors and it's for you to walk through them and take the opportunities, isn't it? What a inspiring story, Charlie. I love that. I just love it.
Well, I think it might be, you know, younger people who are out there and they're struggling. They are undergoing the sort of same struggle that I went through. I said, well, don't give up. If your heart and struggle to sort of find your own musical fingerprint, if you like.
Yeah.
Be inspired by others, but don't sort of try to copy others. And find your own path, but keep the inner belief in yourself. Not an arrogant thing, but sort of saying, you know, I think I can do this, and keep that. And don't be deterred by rejections, because I had many of them. So I'm some sort of thing of hope that for those people who think, well, if that old geezer could do it at his age, there's a chance for me yet, you know.
Oh, bless you. A 20-year overnight sensation. I love that. But I tell you what, that 20-year period leading up to that moment must have actually been where you were learning your craft, though. I mean, you mentioned there about the pubs and people fighting in the background and everything, but you had to actually learn how to interact with the audience, didn't you?
Yeah, well, it sounds as though those years that when I was playing in the pubs, I was gnashing my teeth and bemoaning my fate. But in fact, I met wonderful people. The pub was fantastic. The atmosphere in there was great. And I was learning my trade, yeah. And if I played in a pub, say, I played in lots of pubs, Liverpool, here, there and everywhere, and I'd sing a song, and I thought, well, you know, they're not stuck on that. And then I'd do it, because I had a variety of stuff. I loved country music, but I also loved blues, and I loved the old rock and roll and bits of pop and everything. And you'd learn to sort of, you know, to find out what your audience wanted and then give them what they wanted, really. And I went from playing in pubs. When I got a little car, I used to go and play in the country music clubs. They'd give me a listening at that time.
Yeah.
And that helped as well, you know. So it was then that I began to, Whereas in the pubs, I just sang, never spoke at all, apart from saying hello to friends coming in.
Yeah.
I thought, well, I'll sort of start to tell a little anecdote or say a few things or little stories and things. And I sort of filled the gaps between the songs with little anecdotes. And that became very important. And that was it's a real feature of what we do now on the road.
Yeah.
And I wasn't aware of how important that had become until one night, I think I was playing in Derbyshire somewhere. And at the end of the night, this little fella come over. He said, "Here, you were grand tonight, lad." And I said, "Oh, thanks, Tom, you know." He said, "But I'm a bit disappointed, like." I said, "Why is that?" He said, "They didn't tell hardly any stories." He said, "That's all I come for, really, you know."
So, incredible. So it became a feature now.
Yeah. But it's part of, you learn the game, and that's why I feel a bit sorry for some of these people who sort of go on X Factor or whatever, and they've got none of that background behind them, and they think the world is at their feet. Then they go out on the road. I mean, we did a show years ago in Brighton, and some winner of one of those shows, reality shows on the telly, you know, that sort of show. The bloke in the place said, "Well, so-and-so was supposed to be on next week, but we only sold 20 tickets. And I thought, well, isn't that awful? This poor lad probably thinks that's it now. I'm set for life. And then it all fizzles out. You don't hear from them again. With exceptions, there's some that sustain the success and with some great stories. But for some of them, that, as I say, they come on and they might have, you know, an ability to sing a little bit, but they've got no sort of depth of knowledge from treading the boards for all those years, you know?
Yeah, and I guess that's what it does for you, isn't it? Learning your craft and then taking it out to the world. But you know, you mentioned earlier about how you like lyrics, and I think that comes through so well in all your music. What I find interesting is actually that, you know, the country music genre has kind of claimed you as their own, but actually you have quite a lot of varied influences in. There's a bit of folk, there's a bit of blues, there's all sorts, isn't there?
Yeah, well, I think like a mixed diet, whether it's a culinary one or a musical one, is more healthy, you know.
Yes,
so
that's true.
I've always liked all those variety of things. I mean, my record collection is very eclectic. I mean, there's old blues things, there's all the old crooners, the ballads, there's sort of, you know, all the Beatles stuff and all the great singer-songwriters in there. There's bits of bluegrass, folk, all sorts. And I sort of really enjoy it all. So my little sort of departure into those areas slightly, I mean, I'm not overtly any of those things, I don't think, it's not forced. You know, I love all types of music. And some of it will show through. I mean, a lot of what I write is very ballady and gentle and all the rest of it. And I suppose most people would term it easy listening, which is almost like a swear word now in musical terms, isn't
yes.
it? But that's where I belong, you know, and at least it's my own stuff and it's my own sort of style, and that's developed. And there's nothing nicer, I don't think, when you do create something and find that it has an impact upon somebody else and it touches somebody else. And it's a lovely feeling that you want to keep repeating, because, you know, you're doing the thing you love, and through that you're touching the lives of somebody else. And It's wonderful when it does happen.
Yeah, and you probably can't even appreciate quite the impact it does have, really. I suppose after you get into that that rotor of actually doing a song and then doing another one, you're inspired, aren't you, to carry on doing what you're doing. But actually, the people on the receiving ends are probably equally as inspired to listen to it, because you're having an effect on their lives.
Well, I think they've given me the faith in some of the songs. I mean, when I wrote What Colour Is the Wind, I just thought, that's okay. And played it to this audience, sort of thinking, I hope this is all right, and got this wonderful response. And so I kept on playing it. And it was through people's reaction to the song that I became aware that, you know, the song meant something. And I'd stuck a winner, you know. But, sometimes you're too close to things to be able to appreciate them fully. And that's not just music, it's people and all the rest of it, you know.
So
you can be too close that you stop seeing properly, you know.
Yes,
stop hearing properly.
Yes, and you've got to try and retain that, haven't you, through your life, and look through the eyes of a child almost, haven't you, if you can?
Yeah, and I think to sort of keep focused on sort of trying the best to sort of see and to observe and to take note and to thank God for all the little things, that sort of wonderful things around you, that sometimes, because of proximity, you take for granted, you know.
You can, can't you? So was music always part of your life? Was it there around you as a child and all this melting pot of sounds coming together into your subconscious? Was it really part of your life for, you know, forever?
Yeah, because I grew up in a house. There was, my mother had 11. The house was full of animals. We had chickens and ducks, a duck in the back. We had cats and dogs and lovebirds from Africa. We had a monkey at one time.
Wow, a monkey. Hold on, you can't just say that, Charlie, and move on. I need to know about the monkey now.
Well, it's a lovely story, actually, because my brothers were all Merchant Navy men and came back with the first guitars and things we'd ever seen. But also, they brought all sorts of gifts back from around the world, and one of them, my brother Harry, brought a monkey back, and he picked it up in West Africa, where everybody on board the ship thought it would be a great idea. We'll all get a monkey. So loads of folks on the ship had bought a monkey. Well, about 2 days out at sea, the captain became aware that the ship was awash with monkeys, and the order came round, all monkeys overboard. Well, Harry said, they're not getting my monkey, so he drugged it with aspirin and rum to sort of keep it quiet and to keep it alive, you see.
Oh, Lord.
And so all said the monkey was quiet, still on its sort of regimen of pills and rum. And when we eventually got to Merseyside, it was more lax in those days, so the customs didn't find it. And he came ashore, it was a summer's day, and he had this big overcoat on with the monkey still asleep in his inside pocket. It was only a little thing.
Crikey.
And as he walked through the gate, the customs men on the gate said they knew him well because he'd come that way many times. And he said, we waited till he was about 50 yards up the road and shouted after him, have a good leave, Harry, and look after the monkey, won't you? So
no.
They knew he had it all along. And you can imagine my mother's reaction when they brought it in and sat it down on the floor. And I realise now how cruel it is to take an animal from its habitat. But we loved it. And my mother and everybody, we all cried our eyes out when it did pass away.
Yeah.
And they took it down. I always remember they took it to the pub one night. And it picked out the winning sort of. They had these little tickets that came round, and the monkey picked out the winning ticket, which was about £21, which was a lot of money in them days. So they all came back drunk, even the monkey, you know, and had a rum or two.
So, Charlie, what a childhood! Yeah. That's incredible.
It was a fantastic house. My father was billed as the Silver Voice tenor locally. He was a great sort of ballad singer. My mother was always singing. My brothers, as I say, brought back the first guitars and the songs of Hank Williams and stuff. So this wonderful, chaotic house that I grew up in was me sing, and I used to sit, and my brothers had come back from the ship with their friends, and the crate of beer in the corner, and the guitars would come out, and the banjos and that, and I would sit in the corner banging a biscuit drum thinking, this is fantastic, thinking, this is fantastic. And I realised the power of music to elevate and sort of to lift you, you know.
Yeah.
And when I was about 11, I was very shy, and I thought the house was empty, and I picked up the guitar, and I was playing very badly on one string, the Harry Lime theme. And my brother, who was at home, I didn't know, come in, my older brother, and said, do you want to learn? And I said, yeah. And he showed me a few chords, and that was me. I thought I'd found a friend for life, which in fact it has been, you know. And that was it. So that's where my little musical journey began.
And it all started. And now, of course, you've got awards after awards after awards under your belt. I'm looking down this massive long list here, from the British Country Music Awards, the Irish Record Music Association, UK Country Radio Awards. Wow, what do you do with all those?
Well, it's always nice to get sort of recognition from your peers for something that you love doing, you know what I mean?
I do.
And when it happens, I mean, the only award you can see in my front room is, there's two, but they don't look like an awards because I've got all sorts of paraphernalia around. But one of them is like a work of art anyway, and that's from the Irish Country Music Association, the big awards in Dublin. And the other one, which Ken Dodd gave me, is the Scousology Award, and that's been won by people like Paul McCartney and things like that. That's for Scousers that they think has done something, you know what I mean?
Oh, terrific.
And that isn't the one. Ken Dodd gave me another one, that's one of his things, and in it, it's like a plaque, and it's got to Charlie Lansbury for all his wonderful services to the music industry where his talent has shone like a beacon. I said, like a beacon, Ken.
Terrific.
He says, I know what I've written.
What a great talent he is, though, I have to say. You know.
Oh, he's lovely. He's lovely.
And all from your part of the world. I can hear that wonderful accent that you've got going on up there.
He's a smashy. And he's always taking the mickey out of me. You know, he's always telling people, never listen to Charlie Landrieu while you're driving. In other words, you'll fall asleep and crash and kill yourself, you know.
How dare he?
but he knows. I think it's an honour to be sort of insulted by Doddy. And he knows. And we get on great, really.
Oh,
he's a lovely man.
That's lovely. That's a lovely story. And as you say, it's nice to be recognised by your peers in all kinds of different walks of life, isn't it? You know. And
it
of course,
is, yeah.
You've been inducted to the British Country Hall of Fame as well. I mean, that was a relatively recent thing as well, wasn't it? What was that like?
Well, it was a bit of a surprise, but it's wonderful when I look back at all that, like a lot of the old friends that have been amongst the, you know, previous winners of it. Mm. And it's nice to sort of say, well, yeah, there is a British Country Music Hall of Fame, and my name is in there somewhere. You know, it's nice for your family and for your grandkids not to sort of sit and luxuriate in yourself and think how wonderful you are, but it's just nice to sort of, as I say, get some recognition and sort of, it's nice to see the happiness that it brings to the people around you, you know. And
yeah.
I remember my son sort of saying, do you think you'll ever make it, Dad, you know, when we'd walk the dog, and I'd say sometimes, Dad, I don't think so now, lad, you know. And then other times I'd feel optimistic and say, yeah, you know. And when it eventually happens and these things began to come in, it's nice to see your brothers and sisters who must have despaired if anything ever happened, sort of to think, Charlie's never going to make it. And then all of a sudden it comes along and you can see the pleasure that it brings to them.
Very proud they must be as well, because it's been an absolutely wonderful career. And I suppose that brings me on to the question of, do you know, if you had something you really wanted to do, what's the bit that you haven't quite fulfilled yet then, Charlie? What would you like to do?
I'm very blessed, because all I ever really wanted was a life in music. I did all these other jobs, and all I wanted, I'm not a celebrity type person, and I was never drawn by the fame. I just loved music, and it wasn't any of the other things, you know, the money. I mean, the money's lovely when you just start getting a few bob for what you do, but it was just driven by a love of the music, and all I wanted was a life in music, and I got that.
Yeah.
And I said, if the Lord opened another door for me, I'd walk through. But, you know, if he never opened any more doors, I'm very happy with the ones I've already walked through. And I've got no real ambitions other than to carry on doing what I'm doing the way that I am. And sort of, and it's taken me to places I never dreamed I would have been. And I've met fantastic people through from, you know, so-called ordinary people to people in the business. And I've been very blessed, so I'm not sort of sitting here burning with desire to do something else. I think, I'm very blessed and lucky as I am.
Absolutely, sounds wonderful. And of course, you're still on your tour, and you've got a few more dates left to go, which is going to be excellent. And then after that, what are you going to be doing when your tour's finished?
Well, I suppose it's preparations for Christmas then.
Yes.
And then I go to Ireland for a couple of weeks, where I said I'm world famous in Ireland, you know, Kath.
Well, they seem to like you over there, don't they?
well, that's where it all began. And then I've got a bit of a break, and then I go to Australia in May for 6 weeks to tour Australia.
Terrific.
And that's a wonderful country. I love that place, you know. So I hate the journey, but the trip is worth it for the destination. The place
is
great.
It's a long way, isn't it? I've never been, but everybody who goes always says to me, you know, you want to go back once you've been once.
Yeah. It's wonderful for a number of a variety of reasons. The space is one of the things that I really like. The climate generally, although they do get some extremes. But at the end of the day, it's the people. And the Aussies are great. And I said, what typifies their approach to life is that simple phrase which everybody says now, you know, no worries, mate.
Yes.
That was an Aussie saying that the world's picked up on.
It's wonderful, isn't it?
They're lovely, friendly people. If you're okay, they're okay.
Yeah.
And it's a joy to go back.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. So if somebody wants to find out a bit more about you then, Charlie, and look at all these wonderful tour dates and buy some of your music, which is, you know, well worth owning in their collection, where would you tell them to go?
Well, if they put my name into Google and go to the Charlie Landrieu website, which my son has done, by the way, and I'm very pleased with that. And I've had a lot of compliments about the website, which my son created. It's all there, tour dates, merchandise, you know, all sorts of different aspects of what
I
like.
It looks very nice indeed. It's sheet music down there, there's backing tracks, biography, the fan club, everything they would possibly want to know, Charlie, I think. Excellent.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, he's done a great job.
He has indeed. Well, good luck with everything, Charlie. It's been absolute pleasure to speak to you. And I just love the story about the monkey, as well as divine intervention playing such a part in your career, which is very, very inspirational. So thank you very much,
Kat,
for your time.
Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you for yours. God bless you. And thanks for having me, Kat.
No worries at all. And then what are you going to be doing for the rest of the day then, Charlie?
I've got a couple of little jobs to do. I've got to go into town and sort of visit the bank and pay a few things off.
Yeah,
and
do all that
and then just get ready. And then I've got to sort of get this motorhome ready for us to hit the road again, you know. So
a variety of stuff. Because you're off to Kingsley. Oh, no, you're going to Shrewsbury next, aren't you? So,
No, we're going to the Stables in Milton Keynes, which is a wonderful venue that Johnny Dankworth and Cleo Lane created. And it's only a small place, but it's wonderful.
Yeah.
And then we go to Shrewsbury, then King's Lynn, and then we have the hike from King's Lynn back to Liverpool, where we finish on next Monday night.
But in front of your home audience, what could be better?
Lucky.
Yes. Oh, well, thank you so much, Charlie. It's been an absolute pleasure.
It's a pleasure.
And I wish you ever such a lot of good luck with it all. And it's been a right honour speaking to you. Thank you very, very, very much for your time. It's been wonderful.
A pleasure. God bless you, Catherine.
And
thanks
you.
For having me.
You've been listening to Cat Tales. To listen again to this and other tales, go to cattales.co.uk.